Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today, and Sleep Better Tonight.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today. This is the show where we talk about sleep and the science behind sleep. My name is Andrew Kolsky. I'm your host. And today we're going to be talking with Stacy Becker. She is a dental sleep specialist. And we're also going to be talking about some pediatric sleep issues. So, Stacy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Andrew. It's good to be here. I'm excited to have this conversation.
Great, great. Well, we don't get too many opportunities to talk about pediatric issues, but we're going to come to that in a minute, because first we need to learn about you. So you're obviously a dentist. You deal with sleep issues as well. Tell us how that all came about. Where did you make that connection between dentistry and sleep?
Well, I'm dating myself here. So it was over 20 years ago when I first got out of dental school. And, you know, just to so your listener understands, sleep isn't really discussed a whole lot, even in medical school or dental school. We get about an hour. So when you come out, you're not, you know, 1 to 2 hours on the topic. So when you come out, you're kind of green. And, but I was lucky enough to be in a practice as a new dentist with a senior doctor who taught me how to screen and, you know, ask the right questions. Do people snore? How are they sleeping? What do certain aspects of a face or an oral structure look like that might put someone in a risk factor for airway and sleep issues? So I was referring heavily to sleep physicians in my town, which already is kind of a unique position for a dentist 20 years ago. But my dad had sleep apnea, and he was on a CPAP. And for the listeners, CPAP is that machine that you wear that blows room air past an obstruction, so past a palate, past the tongue. Anyway, my dad couldn't tolerate it. And a lot of people can't tolerate CPAP. A lot of people love it. A lot of people don't. And you just don't know what, you know, what group you're going to land in until you try it. And my dad couldn't tolerate it. His pressure was crazy high. So the sleep physicians came to me and said, hey, you're a dentist. You know, we know that patients that can't tolerate CPAP, oral appliance therapy, oral airway therapy is an option. Why don't you make your dad a device? And I am very analytical. Like, if I can't do it perfectly, I feel like analysis paralysis, I won't do it at all. So I didn't feel qualified. So I started learning more. So I did feel more qualified and started taking more coursework and education through the AADSM, which is the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, and made my dad a device, and really helped my dad with his quality of life and keeping his airway open in his sleep. And I tell you what, when you see that, how you can affect somebody's life that way, it's very rewarding. So it became my family would say an obsession, but a passion of mine. Well, so I started just really diving into that aspect and realizing not only do dentists have such a seat at the table with sleep and airway health, but our seat is pretty big when we start diving into why people even have these issues and where it could start, and how your ENT and dentist are really some of the primary healthcare providers that should be gatekeeping this and triaging and intercepting.
Right, right. So you're leading right to the question that I have for you next, which is, so CPAP, yeah, there's a tremendous number of people that have trouble tolerating CPAP, and unfortunately, they'll try it once, they don't get used to it in one day, and then they put it in the closet and they never use it again. And they don't realize the damage that, you know, sleep apnea can be causing to their heart and their system. But, you know, it is a big problem. I've seen numbers, the average number I've seen is like 50% of the people don't use it. And I have seen several studies that get up to 75% of people who are prescribed CPAP don't use it. So with that, can you dive in a little bit deeper? You say you developed the device for your dad to help him. What was the actual issue that you were fixing, and how did you go about it so that if you can compare what a CPAP does versus what you did?
That's a great question. And a lot of people aren't even aware that there are alternatives to CPAP. And I'm not saying don't, I mean, I actually talk my patients that come to me that are severe back into their CPAP sometimes. I'm like, give it a try. Maybe it's a mask issue. Maybe it's a pressure issue. Maybe it's a combination issue. Maybe you need the device, the oral appliance with your CPAP so we can lower the pressure to make that CPAP more tolerable. So let me explain to your question. How a CPAP works is it takes room air and it blows it past the area that's obstructing, which could be your soft palate when you open and say, ah, and you see that floppy tissue in the back of your throat, that's a point of collapse. And also the base of your tongue, or even the walls of the airway, the muscles and walls of the airway. So the sleep physicians, the sleep technologists, they are adjusting those pressures, or they're giving you an AutoPAP that adjusts automatically and regulates itself to give you enough pressure so that it can keep those points of anatomy from collapsing. Mm-hmm. What's different about CPAP from oral appliance therapy, what we do is we make a device, and there are many different FDA-approved devices, that sometimes all we need to do is stabilize your mandible, your lower jaw. Sometimes that's all we need, or to just give you a little bit more room, and we call it the box. The tongue lives inside a box, which is your mouth. And if it doesn't have room, it's got one way to go. It's either coming out the front of your face, which is a very unattractive look, or it's going to go out the back, which is your airway. So it doesn't have a lot of room. So a dental sleep specialist is going to create a bigger box for you. Sometimes that's opening the airway or the mouth more vertically, or it's bringing the jaw more forward, so that tongue doesn't fall back or the tongue doesn't push against that soft palate. So we're stabilizing and keeping your airway patent from an anatomical aspect, from more stabilization with the oral appliance. It's like two retainers. A lot of people are familiar with orthodontic retainers. And there are different mechanics that can be used with many different devices. And it's the job of the dental sleep medicine specialist to decide when they see you. It's case selection. What device is going to be better for you? Do you grind your teeth a lot? What kind of device do we need to make for that? How many teeth do you have? What is going to be more comfortable? Do you have jaw joint issues? And a lot of people don't realize, sometimes one of the big mistakes people make is, you know, their physician doesn't even understand oral appliance therapy. So they'll say, well, you know, it can cause jaw issues. Well, the reality is a lot of times people have jaw issues because they have obstructive sleep apnea. So they're grinding their teeth, which is part of the disease. They are moving their jaw in different positions all night long, which is part of the disease. So when you get something that stabilizes and helps you breathe, we see TMJ disorder issues improve 90%+ of the time. Wow. So, you know, there are side effects to every therapy. CPAP has side effects, which is why I see a lot of patients, whether their eyes, you know, air blowing into the eyes, into the middle ear, gastric distension. CPAP, nasal CPAP moves teeth. So we get people that have bite changes from nasal CPAP. But oral appliance therapy has its side effects. There can be bite changes as well. Sometimes some issues with the jaw sometimes, but usually we see improvement of jaw issues. But we're both dealing with CPAP and oral appliance therapy, or you'll hear mandibular advancement device, MAD therapy. They're both dealing with anatomical issues, anatomy, which is going to later segue into why I talk about children so much. But these are anatomical issues that the CPAP and the oral appliance are overcoming. And something you said earlier about the heart health, brain health, you know, different studies say, you know, unresolved obstructive sleep apnea untreated can, you know, take a decade of your life off, you know. So I tell patients it'd be nice to have an extra decade, wouldn't it? But one of the things too that we know and is emerging with dementia and issues with, you know, neurological deficits and decline is that stage three sleep. And if you are not getting good stage three sleep, we know that that's when the brain cleanses itself. And that's this really amazing information coming out. You can actually slow down video footage of the brain and just, it's like a little pump, and watch it pulsate and cleanse all that cerebral spinal fluid. It's just all cleansing the brain. And if we're not getting that good stage three sleep and we're not cleansing our brains, it gets sticky in there, you know? And that's where we start to see these neurological declines.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. And this is not so much a CPAP issue as it is an insomnia issue. But the concept that you're talking about of the stage three sleep, I can't tell you how many people I work with who are so convinced that they need to take some sort of a pill to make them sleep. And they don't understand that sleeping pills, and I use the term in quotes for a reason. Number one, they're not made for long-term use. Read the package. Number two, they don't get you stage three sleep. And if you're getting knocked out because you took a pill, and you're fooling yourself into thinking that you're sleeping, you're not getting stage three sleep. Your brain isn't able to do what it needs to do. Your body isn't getting the rechargeability that it needs to get from stage three sleep. And then you get surprised why you still feel, you know, like you're not well rested. That's because you haven't rested is why.
100%.
So with the CPAP angle, if you, you know, many people also have insomnia and CPAP or, you know, OSA, obstructive sleep apnea. So the sleep, you know, problems all need to be addressed if a person's going to get that restful sleep that they need to achieve those benefits. So I want to clarify one thing for the listeners. You know, you're talking about oral appliances and you were describing how the tongue, you know, goes back in the throat. Can you give us a little bit more description? When I hear the word oral appliance, I think to myself, I get scared that I'm going to have this huge thing in my mouth and maybe hoses coming out and I'm going to be really uncomfortable. And what exactly is it truly like when you talk about an oral appliance?
Well, the hoses is more CPAP. So you got the hoses and you need the hoses because that's where the air is going to be blowing past that obstruction. So the hoses are CPAP. The only time you're going to have a hose situation with an oral appliance is combination therapy. So I have helped patients with a CPAP who, I mean, we're talking, Andrew, these patients are, you know, stopping breathing literally 60 plus, like they're not breathing almost twice a minute. I mean, it's really bad. So their pressure is just so high and intolerable. And it's like sticking your head out of a car window going 100 miles an hour and trying to exhale against that. It's not conducive. And let's say it technically opens your airway. Well, it's fragmenting your sleep all night. That's a high pressure. So just because something in theory can keep an airway open doesn't mean we're still getting good sleep either. And that can go for oral appliances too. So, and I'll get to what you're talking about, but the combination therapy, it's like CPR. When you go to blow in someone's mouth to help them breathe, they say, take the jaw and move it forward. well, why are you moving the jaw forward before you blow? It's because you're moving that tongue out of the airway so you can get the air in. And that's where combination therapy, it's like CPAP, is blowing. And it's the person performing CPR. And then our oral appliance is the jaw thrust. So it's helping the air get in so the pressure can come way down. So for those listening, maybe your pressure's off the charts and your doctor's like, look, you're not a candidate for just an oral device. But what if you could do both and we can get your pressure down? But to your point, oral appliances, like I said earlier, I don't know if people are like, if you look, think about Invisalign, a lot of people understand Invisalign, which is like mm-hmm. the clear orthodontic trays or even mm-hmm. a retainer. There are oral appliances back in the day that look like medieval torture devices. So to your point, there are some scary looking oral appliances, but like CPAP, designs have come a long way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I tell people, you know, if you have struggled with your CPAP, you know, talk to somebody because, you know, masks have come a long way. The machines have come a long way. Same with the oral appliances. I have one coming my way because I wanted to give it a try. And they're so lightweight now. It's almost like a shell of your own teeth. They're just flexible. They're lightweight. You snap them in and there might be some elastics on the side or there might be some kind of device on the side. It has to be titratable, meaning it has to be able to be moved back and forth, forward and backward. It needs to be monitored. The over-the-counter devices that look like big mouth guards, some people will say, oh, I tried that. I went to Walgreens. I see more patients that have gone to these over-the-counter mouth guards that have these permanent bite changes that nobody's been monitoring them. They have a false sense of security because they're like, well, I don't snore anymore. Well, what we know is, okay, great, you don't snore anymore, but sometimes your airway is still collapsing on some level and your oxygen's still desaturating. So it's important that you work with, you know, just like you shouldn't buy a CPAP on eBay, you don't buy an oral appliance or blood pressure meds on eBay and try to regulate it yourself either. So it is important to have someone that is qualified and understands what they're doing and that knows how to manage the side effects. But the oral appliances today are very, very comfortable. And it's important that you can tolerate the oral appliance too, to the point of CPAP. Just because I can stabilize your airway, I want your brain to be okay with this relationship. I want your brain to feel safe. I want your brain to be able to slide into good sleep architecture. It's important.
Right, right. Well, thank you for clarifying that. And we are past our point of where we need to take a commercial break. So I'm going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, let's talk about pediatric sleep issues. So we will be back on Sleep Science Today in just a minute with Stacey Becker.
The station that makes you feel good.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Stacey Becker, who is a dental sleep specialist. We've talked about CPAP and adults and mandibular advancement devices and oral devices. Now let's talk about kids. What is different when it comes to sleep issues and kids?
Well, my journey into kids from the adult dental sleep medicine world that started 20 years ago was having my own children. And as I mentioned in the first segment, my dad had obstructive sleep apnea. And we know the biggest phenotype warning sign for you personally having an issue with sleep disordered breathing is, do you have a parent that has that? You know, so I know that there is a chance I have an issue, and then I'm looking at my own children, and I started seeing issues with that. And right now, I mean, it's changing now, but let's go back when my kids were little, about 20 plus years ago, and the only thing medicine had to offer was if they're overweight, obesity, which that wasn't the case with my kiddos, but obesity, okay, we can talk about diet, losing weight, looking at BMI, but tonsils and adenoids. So in a child, they're going to look at tonsils and they're going to look at adenoids. Adenoids are the tonsils that live behind the nose. And if they're too big, they can obstruct nasal breathing. And if the tongue, and then convert you to be mouth breathing. And if your tonsils are too big, then that can obstruct your airway on another level in a different way. So beyond tonsils and adenoids, that's pretty much it with the medical community. CPAP for a child. Well, my children did the tonsils and adenoid removal and still had 6 months later. I'm like, okay, they're better. So it's a piece of the puzzle, Andrew, but it wasn't everything. And as a mom, I'm like, okay, wait a second. I'm a mom. I'm treating adults with sleep apnea, and this is predominantly an anatomical issue that we're using things to overcome anatomical issues. Why, other than CPAP, how can we help a child anatomically? So this is where I went down the rabbit hole with my own children of, okay, let's look at oral facial, dental facial orthopedics, which is moving bone, and there's orthodontics, which is moving teeth, and just trying to help my own children. I personally didn't have enough room for all of my teeth to come in as a child. So my brother and I both struggled with allergies, struggled with enlarged tonsils and adenoids. We came at the age for orthodontics, and they removed, you know, almost 8 teeth, wisdom teeth, and premolars, which was very popular in the 80s. And they weren't really about making room for the teeth you had. It was more about, let's just make the white things look pretty. So going down the path of, okay, why don't we have enough room for our teeth? And what caused it? So when you look at a child that might be breathing through their mouth, first of all, they're breathing through the wrong hole. They're supposed to be breathing through the nose. When we start to breathe through the mouth, this whole growth and development trajectory changes. Now the tongue, which is supposed to be in the palate, developing the upper arch, which is the base of your nose, and your midface, it's now dropping down, Andrew, and because you cannot breathe through your nose. So you're going to go path of least resistance. You're going to start breathing through the mouth. People have seen Napoleon Dynamite probably in that movie. So where he's a heavy mouth breather, but you can even be a light mouth breather and still start to see changes in the face. And I started thinking, okay, my kids are still not breathing through their nose as well. They're not going to have room for their adult teeth, which means they're not going to have room for their tongue. So where's the tongue going to go? Like I said before, if you don't have room for your own teeth, you need to ask why. So the upper arch is constricting because the tongue isn't developing the upper arch. It's dropping down. The kids are mouth breathing. They're not using their nose like they're supposed to. There's many, many, many uses of the nose. Karen Parker Davidson, she's a nose nerd. She's like, there's over 64 purposes of the nose. Zero purposes of the mouth for breathing. Zero. Yet we have all these children mouth breathing. Right. And that can just even be a simple separation of the lips and breathing through their mouth. It doesn't have to be the exaggerated Napoleon Dynamite. But then you start to see craniofacial development issues. The jaws grow down and back. There's plenty of research on this. The face grows down and back. Now you have an even more impinged airway. Let's look at CPAP. We know CPAP in an adult changes teeth position. It pushes back the face. It almost has this reverse growth and development effect. It's holding the midface in place. So like you said, sleeping pills aren't a long-term solution. I know that children do need CPAP to breathe, but it shouldn't be the long-term solution because it's actually stopping growth and development of the midface, making the issue they have worse. Mm-hmm. So in children with CPAP, you definitely want to be seeking out a dental sleep specialist, somebody that understands growth and development, to help that child actually mitigate. You know, we don't want to have any pushing back of the face and making this condition worse. But how about, which is what I do with my own children, we make room. We make room for the tongue. We improve nasal volume. The only person that's going to fix a child's nose beyond allergies in a child is a dental sleep medicine specialist, somebody that understands orthopedics. When you widen the palate, you are widening the nose. You are improving nasal volume. We also get more room for the tongue. We also can get the jaw to come more forward. So these are anatomical issues predominantly that need to be addressed in children too. And when you look at the adult patient, those of you that are seeing adults with obstructive sleep apnea, there's a look. You know, the palates are sometimes too narrow. They didn't have any room for their adult teeth, so they had, you know, extractions. And these are all warning signs that it started in their life at some point. They didn't just wake up one day with obstructive sleep apnea. It started with mouth breathing, probably when they were a kid or a teenager, and the face started changing and the tongue didn't have room. So there are non-anatomical aspects that affect sleep 100%. We know this. Emerging evidence on vitamin D. We know magnesium. We know all these micronutrients. We know arousal thresholds and loop gain and all these different things affect sleep. But anatomy matters. Mm-hmm. And it starts somewhere. So if we can get in a time machine with our adult sleep patients and go back, we could have found this earlier. We could have found this possibly in childhood and helped them out.
Right. Wow. There's a lot of great information there. And it's leading me to my next question here, which is, so, okay, I understand what you're talking about with kids and how the tongue is not, you know, developing the proper upper part of the mouth and all the things that are happening here. You've got, like you said, CPAP, which is not really helping any of that. So with kids, do you try to do something that changes the space and the shape inside their mouth? And if so, what do you do? How do you do that? You can't rebuild somebody.
Right. You are changing a trajectory. So we're basically, when you start to see a hiccup in growth and development, outside of a cold and a child snoring during a very short-term 7-10 day cold or flu session, you know, you don't want to be a mouth breather. That is not how the human being was designed to breathe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For many, even biochemical reasons, it nose breathing warms the air, it purifies the air, you know, the mouth doesn't do any of that. So, from a biochemistry standpoint, you know, you're getting more oxygen when you breathe through your nose. So the brain is definitely lit up better in a nose breather than a mouth breather. But then the growth and development changes. How do we intercept that? So yes, tonsils and adenoids are a piece of the puzzle. But then you also have, okay, let's get in there and identify if this child is already started to have a hiccup in their growth and development. Do they have a vaulted narrow palate? Well, then they're going to need some palatal expansion depending on the age. The earlier you intercept in a child, Andrew, the better, because they are so easy to get back on track. They need less mechanics to get back on track. It could be just as simple as some retraining of nose breathing, maybe a myofunctional device to help them learn where to put their tongue again. Because a lot of these kids, they've been breathing through their mouth so long, they have atrophy of the muscles of the face. Oh, they wow. don't know how to chew their food. They don't know how to put their tongue up, and they don't know how to swallow. Their noses have been turned off. But like an adult, we might use an advancement device, which isn't doing much growth and development. Now, there's a whole field taking off in dentistry of expanding adults too, which is a whole other topic I won't get into, but it is helping patients with obstructive sleep apnea after they're done growing. But in a growing child, it's so easy to intercept and work with the growth and development and expand, put the teeth where they should be, have the bones where they should be, most importantly, and get better nasal breathing, get the tongue up and help them breathe, swallow, function, and the face, the changes in the face and the child just lighting up and their quality of life is, it's so rewarding.
Right. Well, I'm going to ask the question of, you know, if you can describe to us exactly how you do that, how do you expand the space, what's involved? But before you answer that question, we need to take our second break here. So I'm going to do that and we'll come back and we'll get the answer. So stay tuned on Sleep Science Today. We'll see you back after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today.
All right, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We're waiting to get the answer on, for kids, how do you expand that space in their mouth so that they don't have these problems long term?
So I said in the prior segment, early interception is ideal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can get tonsils and adenoids out and get them breathing, you'll see facial changes even from that, because naturally the tongue should go up. The tongue is nature's expander, okay? So when it's the best orthodontist on the planet and it's the worst, if it's not working, everything collapses. If it's working beautifully, everything is building and growing. But say we get past a certain age where the tongue just isn't enough force to grow the face like it was designed, now we have to intercept as dentists and orthodontists and pediatric dentists. What are we going to use? There are different types of palatal expanders. There are rapid palatal expanders that you turn a key a little more frequently in the palate. And it's a little device made of acrylic usually. And it bonds to the teeth and it adapts to the palate. And you turn the key and it's just slowly nudging. It's slowly nudging. Then there are slower expanders that some of them have like an automatic expansion, a little Nitai spring or something in there that just slowly expands. There's no keys to turn. Some doctors might prefer that. Again, it's case selection. It's important that you go to somebody who understands how to do this and knows, one, what is your child going to tolerate? Because it doesn't matter what I have in my armamentarium, if your child isn't going to tolerate it, it's not going to work. So we have to figure out, you know your child, talk to that healthcare provider, you know, all the nuances and all their quirks, right? And that's going to help with case selection of what kind of expander is needed. Sometimes they might have to do something in the top and the bottom arch. So the top arch is the bottom of the nose, and expanding that and putting it back where it belongs and getting it back on track, you'll see a lot of sometimes facial changes as far as like their cheekbones begin to fill out to where they're supposed to be. Instead of growing back flat and down and back, they're growing forward and full. A lot of models you see, you know, they have that forward face and beautiful cheekbones and beautiful jawline. That's because they grew the right way. And we have a epidemic of children just growing down and back in these flat faces, but it affects the airway. It's not just about beauty. Sometimes we'll put something on the bottom too, because the lower arch will compensate for this growth and development hiccup. And you start to see the teeth tip in and get crowded. Sometimes we'll have something on the bottom too, maybe a little Invisalign or something to upright those teeth. The heavy lifting though, Andrew, is in the palate, because that is where the quality of life changes. If we can get that nose more patent, we can make room for a tongue to be up and forward and out of an airway. And then that lower jaw has a better house to live under, and it can come forward and grow forward instead of backwards. So there's different kinds of expander devices that can be used. And if a parent's listening, you know, have the discussions, you know, and ask the questions and let the doctor know, you know, any concerns you might have. And, you know your kiddo better than anybody. So asking, you know, is this something they wear all the time? Can they take it out to eat? Can they, you know, are we sleeping in this too? You know, have those discussions so they can make the best case selection.
Great. Well, thank you for that explanation. So there are a lot of different opportunities to fix what the particular issue is, depending on what your child may be dealing with. All right, I want to make sure we have some time to talk about the next thing here, which is you have been working in this area for a long time, and I know you're passionate about it and you're committed to helping especially kids these days with these airway issues. So you created something called ASAP Pathway, correct?
Yes.
So tell us about that. What is ASAP Pathway?
So the acronym stands for Airway, Sleep, and Pediatric Pathway. And we also love that it's ASAP, because it's important that we get to these kids as soon as possible. The brain is pretty much done, you know, around 6 years old. We know that some of these neurocognitive deficits, I mean, we're always growing. It's neuroplastic for a while, but we know that the neurocognitive deficits, executive function, different things like that, if it's broken and not fixed by ages around age six, those can be long-term deficits. So ASAP, we want to get to these kids as soon as possible. We don't want to wait till 7, 8, 9, 10, like people traditionally have, to get them to an orthodontist or a dentist. Get them in sooner. Get them in at 2, 3 years old when you start to see the problems. It can start at birth even. So we developed a platform, myself and my partners, Dr. Tracy Nguyen and Dr. Michelle Weddle, a platform to train other dentists, pediatric dentists, orthodontists, how to identify and screen, refer appropriately, collaborate with our medical colleagues, and learn how to do this interception, learn how to diagnose what the issue is so we can decide what the best treatment is, because each child is different. It's not cookie cutter. It's not one size fits all. And so how do we have the decision trees to basically help these kids? Like I said earlier, your dentist is really a primary caregiver as far as the airway. So we are seeing people more often than they're even pediatricians sometimes. And if your dentist can identify the craniofacial deficits and refer appropriately, whether it's an ENT or having the expansion, ENT and having palatal expansion to get your kid back on track. But that's what ASAP Pathway is. It's an online educational platform, but parents can even go there and find a provider. So somebody that understands the dental sleep medicine piece, but also the early interceptive orthodontic aspect too, is married together within our program. And you can find providers that can help your kiddo get on the right path. We also have a podcast that I host, ASAP Pathway, the podcast. And we're on Spotify and Apple and YouTube. I think iHeartRadio, and there's something, I can't remember. There's another platform we're on, but Mm-hmm. You know, if you just want to take a listen and hear about this topic in more depth, I talk to ENTs and sleep physicians and orthodontists and oral surgeons, and we talk at great length about the importance of this and how we have an epidemic of poor sleep in children. And we were talking about dementia, but, you know, lack of stage three sleep in children leads to poor growth and development, just even whole body of children with failure to thrive. They're smaller than they should be. So that's when growth hormone is released for all of us, is stage three sleep. So in a child, that's growing, and in an adult, that's repairing. So if we don't get that stage three sleep in childhood, we also know that kiddos that don't breathe well through their nose and mouth, breathe and snore, have a very high likelihood of behavioral problems, difficulties at school, and that can be permanent. The deficits, you hear this watch and wait kind of thing with children. Oh, they'll grow out of it. They don't grow out of neurocognitive deficits. They grow into it. So a child may be snoring at 3 and 4, and there was a study by Dr. David Gazal that looked at this, but then they stop snoring when they go through that pubescent growth spurt because mm-hmm. the anatomy changes, and then the snoring might stop. Sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes it does. And then they study these kids that were 13 years old that do not snore now. They grew out of it, but they did snore at 3 and 4, and they were in the bottom third of their class. And that is a wake-up call. Another study by Karen Bonick looked at 11,000 children that did not breathe well through their nose, were mouth breathing and snoring from ages 2 to 7. And that study came up with the zero tolerance of snoring in the American Academy of Pediatrics, because they found a huge correlation with children mouth breathing and snoring at those young ages having long-term neurocognitive deficits, executive function issues.
Wow.
How to get to them as soon as possible. ASAP.
Right. Wow. Well, that is perfect timing, because we have reached the time that we have for our show today. But I do want to have you share the website. So if somebody wanted to go and look for a provider, what is the web address?
It is asappathway.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So our final note before we wrap up, Stacey, I'd love to hear from you. Give us your final thoughts before we close out the show.
Oh, final thoughts. I know that you might find it a little odd and not used to it if a dentist talks about your airway health, but we really are primed to have probably one of the biggest seats at the airway table, because we are seeing you more often. Our American Dental Association has a call to action for every dentist to be screening adults and children for airway and sleep issues. So if you go to the dentist the next time and they start discussing airway and sleep health, and not just your teeth, don't be surprised, because it really is our obligation to be helping our patients with proper oral facial development, referral to an ENT when necessary, and intercepting when necessary.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So we finally have been able to cover some of the pediatric issues, because it's hard to find people that are specialists in that area. So for those of you that are listening, thank you for listening to us. We have an exciting new show every single week here on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We look forward to seeing you on future episodes.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.